how to start?
Well, you know, it's just writing. I mean,
here's something important to remember about dialogue.
Every word matters.
No, it doesn't.
They're vital.
I want to go to this place that I think it needs to go to.
The only thing that counts is what you see on the screen.
I will write like 4, 5, 6 hours a day.
And it will be a voice made of ink and rage.
Okay, I'm really glad you asked me that question.
Welcome back to the show. In this episode, I sat down with Jeff Anison, the co-founder and president of Legion M, the world's first fan-owned media company. They've got 50,000 investors. They've raised over $20 million, and that community consists of 150,000 members overall. Legion M is paving the way to democratize the business, challenge the studio system, and open the doors for fans to become genuine stakeholders in the creative process. This year, they've got 3 films coming out. My Dead Friend Zoe, which won the Audience Award at South by Southwest. Also the documentary William Shatner, You Can Call Me Bill. And the Fuse TV doc, This Is Not Financial Advice. In this interview, we talk about entrepreneurship, creativity, the entertainment industry, the company Legion M, of course, what a hit movie looks like, and how to invest in indie films.
It's kind of funny, actually, because I went to UCLA and my major was mechanical engineering, but I took a couple screenwriting classes and got lured into it. And so one turned into a couple, turned into more, to the point where I literally came like this close to changing my major to screenwriting because I loved it so much. And but I also loved mechanical engineering. And at the time, I thought like, well, you know, it's a lot easier to have a career as a mechanical engineer and screenwrite on the side than it is to become a professional screenwriter and try mechanical engineer on the side. And so I ended up sticking, you know, with engineering. And I was probably a much better engineer than I ever would have been a screenwriter. But it was funny because it was then 20 years later, or maybe even more than that, that we started this company, Legion M, that found me back on the filmmaking side. And so it wasn't intentional. Like I had a career as a mechanical engineer for a number of years. And then I got lured into Silicon Valley. And, you know, we founded a technology startup. And then, you know, founded a music startup. And then, you know, this is Legion M is the third startup that I co-founded. So for the past 20 years, I've considered myself an entrepreneur, you know, more than anything else. And it just so happened that this particular company led me back to filmmaking, which is something that I was, you know, I've always been passionate about and interested in. And, you know, it's fascinating to me to be coming at it kind of from a different side. Like I'm not a screenwriter. I'm not writing any scripts or anything like that. But, you know, we're dealing with screenwriters. We're dealing with scripts all the time. So it's really cool.
Do you see it as like, it seems like a lot of breadcrumbs are there, but maybe you have a strength of like both sides of the mind. They say the creative mind, and there's like, I would say entrepreneurial and creative are separate, but equal to some degree. Do you kind of see as like you have both superpowers a little bit?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I think that you know, entrepreneurial is just kind of creative and like also crazy, right? You know, or risk, low or high tolerance for risk. You know, I think at the end of the day, I'm a very creative person. And, you know, back when I was taking screenwriting classes, that was an outlet for my creativity in writing. And now I'm still, you know, creative. It's just I'm expressing my creativity through building business, if that makes sense. And it's kind of weird. Like you don't think of building business as a creative enterprise, but it's extremely creative and extremely, you know, like that's an extremely important part of it. And in my experience, people who are successful entrepreneurs and successful business leaders are oftentimes extremely creative.
I'm pretty obsessed with a lot of stuff we're talking about. I'm actually writing a book now, and the idea is the self-reliant artist. And it's about kind of like doing your art, but also like not being a starving artist, making it work for yourself and that type of thing. You talk about like risk mitigation. Do you see it as more like perceived risk? Like people who don't understand entrepreneurship at all think everything is equally risky, but it's not really the case. It's more like your perception of what is a risk and what is not. Can you talk on that at all?
Yeah, I think it's a really good point. I mean, I think that one of the things that being an entrepreneur, being in startups and being successful, right? And I don't say that like, you know, it's like, oh, I'm this like successful entrepreneur, but like I've been in successful startups before, right? Whether that was because of or in spite of me. And one of the things that you really learn is that is the ability to fail. And like, I think that that's, for a lot of people, failing, like that's the risk. Like, oh my God, what if I fail? But for the entrepreneur, you realize that failure is just part of the process. And really the key to entrepreneurship is the ability to figure out how to safely fail and to fail quickly so that you can learn from it and then go on and succeed. And so I think that, yeah, I mean, it's so to give you a real story, when I started my first startup, when I got pulled into it. So I was a mechanical engineer. I had a steady job working at Hasbro, designing toys. And, you know, one of the pillars of American industry, the Hasbro toy company. And I left that job, which was a good paying, steady job. I had a family. We had just bought a house. So I had all of the stuff. Like, it's so much easier to be an entrepreneur and to take risks when you don't have these sort of things. But I had one child and we had just had twins that were born. We had just bought a house and I left my steady kind of high paying, good paying job as an engineering at Hasbro to join this startup company that had a total of $25,000 in the bank. And like, would it be around in 3 months? Who knew? And a lot of people honestly thought that I was having a midlife crisis or something like that. But it's for me, I was fortunate enough and to have like a safety net. Like I had family in the area. My wife and I are both from this area. And like, I felt like, you know, my relationships were strong, you know, with my wife at home and with my extended family. And it's like the worst thing that could have happened had that company gone out of business, you know, is, and, you know, I mean, I felt like I was eminently employable, but, you know, if that company had gone out of business and for some reason I hadn't been able to go out and get another job, you know, the worst case is that, you know, well, we'd have to move in with our family or something like that and kind of do a reset. And I was okay with that. And so like, for me, that was the risk. And that was the understanding the downside. It was purely financial. Whereas on the flip side, the ability to go out and kind of pursue my dreams and to do something that I really believed in and kind of bet on myself was really enticing. And so I took that risk. And, you know, funnily enough, 6 months later, the Hasbro office that I was working at shut down. And literally, I would have been forced with a decision of whether I had the opportunity and wanted to move to Providence, Rhode Island from California, right, you know, to keep a job or been laid off. And so, you know, that kind of path that I was on, you know, or that risk calculation of like, oh, am I going to leave this super stable job to join this risky startup turned out to be completely wrong, because 6 months later, the super stable job was gone and the risky startup was on its path to becoming, you know, a hugely influential, you know, company and influence in my own life.
Did you do anything at the time? I'm kind of tapping into what I assume is like the engineer mind. Did you put all that down on paper, meaning like, okay, it may take us this long to get back and this could have, like, did you go through that whole fear setting analysis that way, or pros and cons, or how did you kind of come to that decision?
Not for me. I mean, I've just never been one of those people that that writes all that stuff down and writes down pros and cons sheets. And I think it's a very reasonable and very effective process. And it's just not one that kind of resonates with me. So it was really just kind of like a, you know, I think it was the calculus in my head, right? I was commuting at the time. So I had a lot of time to spend in the car to kind of think about things and think about what I wanted to do with my life. And, you know, I have a very high tolerance for risk and, you know, also a very strong inclination to like try things. And so, you know, like that was how it kind of netted out for me, but it wasn't down on paper after thorough, rigorous analysis. It was just like, yeah, you know, like, I think this is where it is. And again, just recognizing, I think if you can kind of face your fears and say like, okay, assume that this thing that I'm afraid of happens. And if you put yourself in that mindset of like, okay, here I am, you know, for me, it's an extremely useful thought exercise, right? Because so often the way that we're thinking about things is dictated by our perspective on it. So whether it's like, oh my God, what if I lose my job, right? Put yourself in that mindset. Okay, you've just lost your job. What do you do? And if you force yourself to think that through, a lot of the times you're like, oh, wow, you know, like that's not really that bad. It's the same thing when you're evaluating different ideas. And one of the things that I find particularly effective for myself and for others is when somebody pitches you an idea and you're like, oh no, that'll never work because of X, Y, and Z. Like that's the default position for a lot of people when they're approached with something new, because you've thought it through, you've got your idea how it works. But if you can say, well, okay, hold on one second. I'm going to stop for a second. I'm going to put a gun to my head and say, okay, you have to move forward with this new decision, right? Somebody else just made it. You are now have to react to it. How can you make that work? And you switch your mind from saying, coming up with all the reasons why this don't work, that this won't work, to, well, you know, what if you did this? Or what if you did that? Like that mindset is extremely liberating. And I find so frequently in my own life, it allows you to see paths that you never saw before, and maybe accept an idea or recognize an idea for a route which was different from the one that you were on.
There's kind of the studio, you know, adage of like, no one gets fired for saying no, but that ignores all the opportunity cost. And that seems to be a lot of that's why we are where we are today with just IP and sequels and everything else. Do you feel like Legion kind of came about because of the way things are? What's your take on like where the business is today?
Well, the movie business is in a really, you know, just weird place right now, like a real time of transition because of all of these, you know, forces, whether it's streaming and, you know, to the rise of AI and all that sort of stuff. So I think that's a pretty big, you know, kind of discussion. I think as far as like when it comes to, I mean, you're right, so much in the entertainment industry. And again, like, I think this is not unique to the entertainment industry, but is driven by risk and fear of failure. And you kind of understand why. It's like, you know, it's easy as a screenwriter or as a film producer or kind of people from our side of the fence to cry like, oh my God, you know, why is Hollywood so unwilling to take risks? And they're such a reliant on existing IP and kind of quote unquote safe bets and all that sort of stuff. And that's what's wrong with the industry. And, you know, like I think creatively 100%, but when you put yourself in the position and say, hey, Brock, you want to write $100 million check, you know, to finance a movie, and you got two options. One is you can make Fast and Furious 14, and you know, the previous, you know, 13 sequels had this sort of return on investment.
So you
can reasonably expect that you're going to turn that $100 million into a lot more than $100 million. Or you could take a swing on this completely unknown, unproven idea that could cause you to lose all of your money, lose your job, and, you know, but also could, you know, make you a lot of money, right? Like it's just when you're the one that has to write $100 million check, you know, I'm only imagining here because obviously I've never written one. But that's kind of the trade-off. And so I think that to me is what I like. Understanding that helps you understand the way the industry works and just the reality of it all. That said, it's completely maddening. And if I had a nickel for every time somebody had turned down an idea because they're like, oh no, somebody tried that before and it didn't work. And you're like, what are you talking about? Like somebody tried something that was maybe somewhat similar, but this is completely different, right? The same way that Star Wars was completely different from, I'm sure, like the 10 million other, you know, failed attempts at Star Wars or not good attempts at, you know what I mean? It's just like, it's crazy. The whole sort of mindset of like, oh no, that didn't work before, so it's not going to work in the future. And, you know, for me as an entrepreneur, you know, it's like, well, I mean, just because it didn't work in the past, that doesn't mean that it won't work. And like, why didn't it work in the past? Like, I think that's one of the most valuable things that you can do as an entrepreneur is you can look at where other people failed and try and learn from that. And so, you know, it can be challenging, but like I said, I think there's, you know, it's like gravity. We can argue like, oh my God, wouldn't the world be a better place if gravity doesn't exist? Well, you know, okay, that's great. It does. And there's no change in it.
So you've got a couple projects coming out. My dead friend, Zoe, this is not financial advice. William Shatner, you can call me Bill. With all that in mind, how are you going about choosing projects? They all sound very different. Is there a certain criteria you see kind of across the board? Are you looking at budget, known entities? Like, how do you kind of, what all factors into some of these decisions for choosing projects?
Well, so Legion M is a fan-owned company. And so at the end of the day, we have about 50,000 shareholders. And I effectively work for them. And so we need to represent their interests. And so a lot of what we do is polling our community and trying to get a sense from our community of what they want to do and what are projects that we think can grow our community. And so I would say that the projects that we move forward with is the intersection between the projects that we would like to be a part of and the things that we want to do and the projects opportunities that are put before us, if that makes sense, right? Mm-hmm. Because we would love to work on the next, you know, Disney Star Wars franchise or, you know, something like that. But like Disney isn't calling us saying, hey, Legion M, you know, will you invest in this movie or will you help us produce this movie? And so, yeah, I think again, like when it comes to building a company, it's a lot like kind of building a career, I think, or building really anything in that it's not so much like people think that when you're starting a company, that the fundamental question is like, okay, well, what is that company going to do? And what is its advantage and disadvantage? So, you know, Legion M on the surface is pretty easy. It's like our idea is like, we believe that an entertainment company that's owned by a million fans has huge competitive advantages in the marketplace. You've got a legion of people. If we could grow to have 1 million shareholders, we'd have, you know, a legion of people to help us choose the right projects and harness the wisdom of the crowd and make better decisions. When our movie's released, we've got a legion of people that'll come out opening night that allows us to kind of, you know, put our finger on the scale and give our movies a better chance of success. You know, you can enumerate all the different ways that a legion of people can help you. But that's not the fundamental question of Legion M. The fundamental question of Legion M is how do you go from zero shareholders to 1 million shareholders, right? Like once you get to 1 million, like, yeah, you're going to see this stuff work or not work, and you're going to have to navigate that. But it's all completely moot when you start out on day one and you have no shareholders at all. And so the question is, okay, how do you grow from zero to, you know, 10,000 shareholders? And now we're up to 50,000 shareholders. And now we're, you know, talking about how do we get from 50,000 to 100,000? And so a lot of the projects that Legion M was involved with in our early days were really stepping stones. It was like, okay, yeah, we feel like this is going to allow us to grow our community. It's going to allow us to work with people that we respect and, you know, think are going to, that we'd like to work with in the future. It's going to allow us to learn about, you know, the industry, about how our particular company kind of fits into this industry. And that was really the criteria. Now we've gotten to a point where we are fully financing and producing movies of our own. And so we've got a lot more latitude. Like 5 years ago, it was, you know, what projects were willing to work with us as a small company, this with a grand idea and 10,000 investors and, you know, the small amounts of money that we had to kind of play with. Today, we're at a point where we have a lot more control over our destiny because we can make a movie happen. And we've made two, right? The William Shatner doc and My Dead Friend Zoe, which premiered at South by Southwest and won the Audience Award this year. That has Sonequa Martin-Green, Natalie Morales, Morgan Freeman, and Ed Harris in it. Both of those movies were made possible by Legion M. And so, you know, like I said, we've got a lot more latitude these days to chart our own destiny, other than the fact that we're still kind of limited by budget, right? We can't finance a $100 million film. We've got another great film on our slate called Defiant, which is the story of Robert Smalls. And it's a wonderful, wonderful story that deserves to be seen. There's the huge resonance out there. We know that it's right. But that in order to do that film, you're going to need probably at least $50 million. And that's not something that's kind of within our realm of being able to, you know, make happen today. And so instead, we've got to go kind of the more traditional route of like, okay, we've got to develop this to the point where we could sell it to a studio or to some partner that could provide that level of support.
What does it look like? It sounds like you're still accepting new shareholders. What does that look like from the position of a shareholder? What's minimal to get in? What do they kind of see in addition to, you know, putting some help into Hollywood movies getting made?
First of all, you don't have to invest in Legion M to get involved. You can just go to legionm.com. You can sign up for free. It's a great way for people to kind of see what this whole thing is about and to get to know us a little bit and, you know, get you on the list for a lot of the Legion M activities and all that sort of stuff. If you choose to invest, it literally, you're buying stock in the company is what it is. And, you know, we tell people it's a risky investment. Like we tell them that up front because it is. And we want everybody to know. I mean, the fact is most startup companies fail, period. So, you know, the most likely outcome of investing statistically, the most likely outcome is that you're going to lose your investment because most startup companies fail. And we've been at this, you know, for 8 years, we've beaten the odds, but you know, like there's no assurance that we're going to beat the odds next year and that, you know, or the year after that until we kind of get to where we need to go. That said, the fact that most startup companies fail, those were the exact same odds that Walt Disney faced when he started, you know, Disney, and what Mark Zuckerberg faced when he started Facebook. And, you know, the point of it is that while most startup companies fail, the ones that succeed can go on and change the world. And, you know, if you were an early investor in Facebook or Disney or anything like that, like you would be loving it right now because of the fact that, you know, like you'd be that stock that you bought back when they were at Legion M stage is immensely valuable. And so that's fundamentally what it is, what it means to invest in Legion M. And the good news is you can invest as little as $40. So we've made it simple. Like, you know, we've tell people straight up, this is not a place for your retirement money. This is, you know, money you should never invest more than you could comfortably afford to lose. But if you want to, you know, take a swing of the bat and you want to join us. I mean, Paul and I are investing, the two founders are investing more than anyone because of the fact that we believe that this company has the ability to do something really special. And so that's, you know, it's kind of a risk reward sort of trade-off, right? You know, nothing ventured, nothing gained.
So all that's very, very good to talk about and very good for everyone to know. Can you talk a little bit about like what a hit looks like though? So I did an interview with Tori Tunnell. She's the producer of the new Godzilla series. Prior to where she is now, instead of pitching a single movie idea, she would pitch to her investors, we want to make 10 movies like this. And then the chances of one of those being a mega hit is obviously higher. It seems like you guys have some of that baked in. Can you talk about like what a hit looks like in Hollywood or what, you know, being a member of this for a long time could look like if there is a hit?
Yeah, no, it's a really great question. And I think it really kind of cuts to the core because I think that honestly, Hollywood has a reputation, and I think it's a well-deserved reputation for, you know, being a place where starry-eyed investors get separated from their money, right? And the fact is, you know, all that stuff that I said about how, you know, most startups, you know, fail, like that same thing is true for most movies. And, you know, most independent movies do not make money, right? And, you know, for the shareholders. I mean, that's just kind of a fact. And I think, you know, a lot of producers won't tell you that, right? You know, a lot of producers, like they point to like, oh, well, look, 47 Meters Down made this much money, or Blair Witch, like that only cost like this much and it made this much. And, you know, that's like, you know, pointing to the fact that somebody won $1 billion in a lottery ticket, like, oh yeah, you should invest in the lottery. And it doesn't really work like that. I also think Hollywood is extremely complex, and the deals that are put together for financing films are extremely complex. And, you know, just like a simple example is a lot of times most movies will have equity investors, right? And those people are invested in the movie and they've got a long-term stake in it. But then they will also have like debt financiers, right? And the debt financiers are what's, you know, commonly referred to kind of as last money in, first money out. And, you know, those are the investments where you may or may not have a little bit, you know, a little taste of the long-term success of the company, but you have a fixed return, say it's like 10 or 15%, that you are almost certainly going to get back. Right? Because you were the last person to put money in, right? So all the risk of like, oh, what if the movie doesn't get made, right? You know, what if this happens? What if, you know, all that risk is gone and all the people who invested on day one are faced with that risk. And, you know, you also get the first money out, right? So, you know, if it's a $5 million film and you put in $1 million worth of debt financing and the movie comes out and it does $2.5 million worth of, you know, revenue that's going to go, you know, comes back to the film, you know, the first million you get, right? Plus your return on that. And then whatever's left over kind of flows into the waterfall. So bottom line is that there's kind of advantageous positions and there's disadvantageous positions. And there are, you know, positions that have a huge amount of risk and arguably a lot of return, as well as a small amount of risk, but almost guaranteed return. And so I think that part of the challenge in, you know, finding smart deals in Hollywood is kind of those dynamics. And so like when Legion M funds our stuff, you know, these two fan-funded films, like we didn't take, you know, debt on either of those, right? You know, we didn't have like classes of shareholders where, you know, like, oh, these guys are going to win, but these guys are going to lose. And again, it's a little bit contrary to the way that a lot of the deals are structured in Hollywood. But I think to kind of get to your question, you know, having a hit is, I think it's as hard probably today in 2024 as it's ever been. And, you know, that's because, you know, so much of the industry is driven by the streamers, and the streamers have very noticeably, very publicly, you know, cut back on their spending. And I think that's kind of the dynamic that we're living in today. Like, you know, the box office is still trying to recover to pre-pandemic levels. The streamers are at this moment, you know, not, you know, writing huge checks and getting into bidding wars out of film festivals and that sort of thing. And when it comes to things like VOD and even theatrical tickets, like we also live in an age where there's arguably too much content out there, right? Like there's more stuff releasing any week than anybody can even keep up with. And so, you know, if I subscribe to Netflix or two or three streaming services, there's so much content coming at me. And if I want to, I could even, you know, jump from service to service, and I could do Netflix for a month and then Disney Plus for a month and then Amazon for a month. And even the most voracious watcher, there's more content out there than you can consume. So I think it's harder than ever to make a hit at this moment in time. And I think really kind of the interesting question is for all of us that are on the content production side is, you know, when does the pendulum swing back? Right? You know, when do things change? Because like, nothing is ever static and everything is a reaction to what came before it. And I don't think that it's going to be like this forever. You know, I think that people are watching more than they ever had. The world is more globally connected than it's ever been. And so I think it's, you know, it's as challenging now, but hopefully the pendulum will swing back and maybe the stuff that's being produced now, you know, the odds will be in your favor when it's releasing in a year or two from now.
And just to reiterate, we're almost out of time. Where can people invest in and where can they follow along for updates?
Yeah, just go to legionm.com and you can learn all about, like I said, you don't have to invest. You can join along and kind of come along for the ride a little bit. And if you believe in what we're doing and you like what we're doing and you want to, like I said, for as little as $40, you can join the journey with us. You know, all the details are on legionm.com. We can also follow us on social media. It's just Legionm Official. And that's across everything, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, I think LinkedIn, YouTube, everywhere.
Thanks so much for tuning into the show. Before you take off, I want to give you a free gift. I'm giving you my first book, Ink by the Barrel, for free. That's the digital download and audiobook at brockswenson.com. Inside this book, you'll learn how to annihilate writer's block by embracing Elizabeth Gilbert's playful trickster mentality. You can learn to weaponize your anxiety with Kevin Kelly's different is better approach. And learn how to defend your time with Ryan Holiday's calendar anorexia mindset. There's just a few other ideas in the book, Ink by the Barrel. It's also based on over 400 interviews I've done right here on Creative Principles. So go steal that book right now, Ink by the Barrel, to learn how to be a prolific writer. You can get your copy, that's digital download and audiobook, at brockswinson.com, brockswinson.com. And if it's your first time here, thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. Make sure to hit that subscribe button so you never miss an episode.